A production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
The Committee on the Judiciary will come to order. The Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Gillespie, Heideprim, Schmidt, Trebek-Berry, Valley,
here.
Teason,
here.
Abdallah.
Here. We have a quorum. Chair will entertain motion to approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Second.
I have a motion and second to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Any discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes of the last meeting are approved. Just to remind everybody, if you got a cell phone on, please turn it off. And if you're here to testify before the committee, to sign in at the ledger at the back of the room. We got a little shuffling around to do on the agenda today. We've had a request to defer Senate Bill 146 to February 12th. I believe that'd be next Thursday. Yes. February 12th, 146 is deferred. Also, we're deferring 148 until February 12th. Any questions? And then we're going to jump around also on the agenda for...
Senator,
yes. Which one? Okay, we can. You want us to take the testimony of that witness? Okay. We'll get to them. We're going to jump around on the agenda due to scheduling of the other senators, so we're going to take Senate Bill 89, Senator Knutson. That's down below the line.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Knutson, State Senator from Sioux Falls. Senate Bill 89 is a uniform law. It actually updates Article 7 of the Uniform Commercial Code. The base of Article 7 that we currently have in our code is 57 years old. In 2003, the Uniform Laws Commission took a look at this article and finalized its revision to Article 7, which deals with documents of title, warehouse receipts, and the like. I can tell you I've practiced business law for 34 years and have never dealt with an Article 7 issue. It is not at the forefront of the Uniform Commercial Code, but the Uniform Laws Commission has been revising the UCC, which has 9 articles in it, over probably more than a decade, and ultimately it makes sense for us to adopt all the pieces as they've been revised. So I'd be glad to try and answer any questions on revised Article 7, but this was adopted in 2003. It has now been adopted by at least 31 other states. And it's simply a modernization, primarily to reflect the electronic nature of commercial transactions today. Thank you.
Any questions for Senator Knutson? Senator Teason.
Senator Knutson, there's not necessarily anything wrong with something 57 years old. Is
there's not even anything wrong with something 58 years old.
For those of you that aren't familiar, this is a typical Senator Knutson bill that's at least 50 pages, and the reason they pass because nobody takes the time to read them.
Second.
Further discussion? Thank you, Senator. Other proponents of Senate Bill 89? Proponents? Well, I know there are no opponents. Are there opponents? opponents? Public hearing on Senate Bill 89 is closed for committee discussion and or action. Senator Heideperm moves to pass. The other lawyer wants a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Pardon? I put in a one-page bill, and these two jump all over me on questions. We have a motion and a second to pass Senate Bill 89. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Gillespie?
Pass.
Heideperm?
Aye.
Schmidt? Turbeck Berry?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Abdallah?
Aye. 5-0. 6-0. We have a motion for consent. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second for Senate Bill 89 to go on the consent calendar. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? 89 will go on consent. Senator Knutson. Senate Bill 127.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Dave Knutson, State Senator from Sioux Falls. Senate Bill 127 is one of the, is a bill of the same nature as you see each year. In 1994, Governor Janklow appointed a task force called the Governor's Task Force on Trust Administration. That task force, I've been privileged to be the chair of that task force since its inception. Each year we have come to the legislature for now, I believe, 13 years with a bill which makes minor changes, cleanups in our trust statutes. South Dakota is typically ranked among the top two or three, frequently number one, in terms of attractive jurisdictions to locate trusts. Part of that is unquestionably our not having a corporate income tax, or not having an income tax. Second, we repealed years ago, I think back in the 80s, the rule against perpetuities, which allows for trusts to have a even a perpetual duration. And then lastly, we rank high because of our trust administration statutes, in large part, I think, to the work of the task force in cleaning them up and tweaking them on a yearly basis. The task force is composed of roughly equal numbers of practicing attorneys in the trust area and trust department representatives from banking institutions. The bill in front of you is the 2009 version of the tweaks. This is somewhat long, but many cases you'll see where we're changing only a few words in a particular section. The over time, when this started, I used to be somewhat knowledgeable on the types of issues we were addressing. As we've gone on, the technicians in this area have been increasingly dominant. So again, this is probably one where I can limp through the questions, but I know I can't run through the questions as to the thinking behind this. Part of this is always adjusting to changes in the Internal Revenue Code and regulations and interpretations promulgated by the IRS. I would tell the committee that there is, I got late last night just a bunch of an amendment, which I haven't had time to get to the LRC, that I think I'll offer on the floor because it's cleanup, changing with to within, deleting a comma here and there. The only change of substance, not really substantive, I would, if the committee wants to turn to page 30, on page 30, lines 16 through 24 create two definitions. We believe that those actually should go into 55.15.1, which is a definitional section for that chapter. So the only big part of the amendment that I will offer on the floor is simply to delete those lines and then amend, put in an amendment inserting those two definitions into 5515.1. So with that, I'd be glad to answer questions. I think it is fair to say that over the years, the legislature has adopted the proposals coming from the Trust Task Force, and I don't believe has ever had any reason to regret passing what we have proposed.
So you're going to put the amendments on the floor?
Yes, just because I got them at 7 o'clock last night.
Assuming it gets to the floor.
Assuming it gets, that's a fair observation, Mr. Chair.
Other proponents? Me too. This is a short one, only 36 pages.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Brett Aftal. I'm the legal counsel for the Division of Banking, and just want to provide a couple comments on this bill and the task force in general. I believe Senator Knutson's very modest when he talks about the task force and the reasons that people locate trust here. This task force has a big part to do with that. It's the only one of its kind in the country. Other states have tried to model it to a certain extent with much less success. But it's a complicated area of law. This task force does a great job of keeping us up to date, but not too far ahead of other states. And everything in that bill was fully debated at four meetings this year. And the areas of this law affect more than just the trust departments and estate planning attorneys. It also affects the trust companies in South Dakota, and we currently have 35 with more to come that currently have under administration about $44 billion of assets. So it's an important area. The task force, it's in good hands with this task force, and we are a non-voting participant in that just to keep the issues of the trust companies at the forefront and provide input to the task force as they move through this area of law. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? Senator Valley.
As it went through this task force, I'm sure that you said it was debated. Did this come out unanimous out of the task force? And if it wasn't unanimous, what were the bones of contention?
Mr. Chairman, typically only things that are unanimous or by consent of the entire group make it into the bill. I can testify that we had an issue that we brought to the task force and it was not unanimous, and it is not in the bill that's before you today.
Further questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there other proponents? Other proponents? Are there other opponents? Are there opponents? Seeing none, the public hearing on Senate Bill 127 is closed for public, closed to the public for committee discussion and or action. Senator Trubak-Berry moved to pass, Senate, seconded by Senator Heideprin. Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor of the due pass on Senate Bill 127 signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Gillespie,
aye.
Heideprin,
aye.
Schmidt, Trubak-Berry,
aye.
Valley,
aye.
Teason,
aye.
Abdallah,
aye. 6-0. Mr. Schroyer, is your witness here?
Yes.
Do you want us to take the witness's testimony now?
That's important.
Sure. This is which one is it?
146.
Oh, here it is, 146. Increase the penalty for solicitation of a minor. This is Senator Gerstad's bill, and you can go ahead, Hope.
Thank you very much, and good morning to everyone. Senate Bill 146 relates
to... You've got to identify yourself.
Hope Okerlund Matchin. I'm with the Minnehaha County State's Attorney's Office. And Senate Bill 146 relates to South Dakota Codified Law 2224A5, which is the solicitation of a minor. And currently, it provides for a first offender, the maximum penalty is 2 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary. It's a Class 6 felony. And I have come across many cases in my practice as a prosecutor for Minnehaha County in which, in my opinion, the facts of the case warrant a significant increase, or I don't know if it's significant, but definitely an increase in the penalty. And I am proposing and have, there are a number of individuals in support, number of senators and representatives who have signed on to my thoughts, that we increase the possible penalty to a Class 4, which would be up to 10 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary. I want to make it very clear that it is not my thought that everyone who solicits a minor, and what we're talking about basically here are individuals who get online, generally adult males, who get into conversations, chats with young girls online. It doesn't have to be a young girl. It can be, under the code, a law enforcement officer acting as a young girl. But we've had cases where 2 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary is just not enough of a penalty. And it's not enough of a penalty to really get these individuals to stop and think before they commit these crimes. And there are certainly many, many instances where a penalty of up to 2 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary would be sufficient, but there are also many, many cases where it's insufficient. And I certainly could give you some examples. When an individual solicits a minor online and gets into a conversation with a minor or with a law enforcement officer acting as a minor, and they and I have to say that you really don't understand the conversations that go on, these written conversations that go on between the individual, the offender, and the child unless you read them. They're extremely graphic and very, very offensive to an individual who is not accustomed to reading these types of chats. But they go on to eventually discuss actually engaging in prohibited sexual behavior. And oftentimes it includes sexual intercourse. But when these offenders go beyond talking to the minor about, you know, let's do this, when should we do this, I'd like to come to your home, oh no, I can't have you at my home, my mother's here. But when they actually go to the point where they make plans with the minor to meet at a place to engage in this activity, or they talk about meeting at a place to engage in this activity and I'll bring along a webcam because I have a webcam and I've been, and I'll use my terms, which are not the terms that you're going to see between the offender and the child, but, you know, I've been turning my webcam on and I've been masturbating in front of my webcam and I've been asking you to do the same, but you haven't been able to comply because you don't have a webcam, so I'll bring a webcam, and we'll meet at this park in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and we'll get together, and we'll engage in this activity, and then you can take home this webcam, and you can turn that on, and we can continue to do what we've been doing. And when people get to that point where they actually meet up with the child at the park, and we've had cases where it's actually been a law enforcement officer that's been engaging in the chats, and we've apprehended these people at the park in their vehicles, perhaps actually carrying the webcam that they're going to give to the child. In those situations, it is my opinion, and I know it is the opinion of judges in Minnehaha County as well, that in those cases, 2 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary is not a sufficient penalty. And I think that I would hope that the majority of the people in this room would agree with me, that that is just not a sufficient penalty. I tried a theory, that being that if you went to the park and you were, had indicated in your chat that you were going to engage in sexual activity, that that would rise to the level of attempted sexual contact. Judge Zell agreed with me that if it was an actual child, an actual 12-year-old that was going to meet with the offender at the park, that he thought that was attempted sexual contact. But if it's not a child, but rather a law enforcement officer, and thank goodness or thank God it is a law enforcement officer and not an actual child, but if it is a law enforcement officer, it does not meet the criteria, it does not meet the elements of attempted sexual contact. So we need to deal with those situations in a different manner. And my proposal is that we deal with it by enhancing the possible penalty. And I would just reiterate, I am not at all saying that everyone who commits this offense warrants 10 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary, but I think that needs to be available for those situations where we have offenders who go beyond just simply soliciting the minor online.
Any questions for Hope? Senator Gillespie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Matchin, I'm wondering, can you give the committee an idea how many maximum sentences have been imposed under these factual circumstances? I don't expect you to have it down to a precise figure, but I just wonder how many maximums have been imposed already.
What we are generally finding, or what we are generally experiencing in Minnehaha County, would be 2 years, and this is generally what we ask for. We are asking for open pleas, and the judges are imposing two years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary suspended, and then imposing jail time, 90 days or greater. I think they're doing it in that manner because then we still have something to work with. If you just impose the 2 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary in these cases and you send these individuals to the penitentiary, they're out in about 6 months, and then they move on to being on probation is not a simple matter, but I think that allows the judges to still have some control. You do your 180 days in jail, you do your 90 days in jail, you reoffend, we can still send you to the penitentiary for those 2 years.
Further questions? Senator Valley.
I'm just wanting to make sure I understand. This is any type of solicitation. It isn't just over the internet. Is that correct? Or is this just through some means of electronic where I don't see the people?
No, it can. And I understand you don't have the statute in front of you, but it's any type of solicitation. It's not just over the internet. It's just that we experience it frequently over the internet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this would be this, if we had an 18-year-old and a 17-year-old, this would still apply, be a Class 4 felony?
It is the person, a solicitation of a minor, if the person is 18 years of age or older and the minor or someone they believe to be a minor, and I have to look back because I think that a minor is defined as, and let's, I want to be make sure that I am accurate, because it is, I think it is defined a little differently in this code. Here it is. A minor and solicit are defined. A minor is a person 15 years of age or younger.
Thank you.
Senator Turbeck Berry.
I guess I want to be clear. Are you here on behalf of the Minnehaha County State's Attorney's Office?
I am.
And I'm sorry to be so ignorant. Are you actually the State's Attorney, or who is the State's Attorney down there these days?
The State's Attorney, the current... We just had a change.
Okay.
Dave Nelson had been the state's attorney for Minnehaha County for, I believe, 20 years. And currently, Aaron McGowan is our state's attorney, just as of January of this year. And I'm a deputy state's attorney. I was a chief deputy for many years, but now I resigned that position, and I'm a deputy state's attorney. I've been there for over 12 years.
Okay, thanks. Well, I don't feel as ignorant then if it's just been the last month. Are you speaking on behalf of the South Dakota State's Attorneys Association?
I am.
Okay.
We have the support of the South Dakota State.
They have adopted some sort of resolution.
They are in support of this.
Okay. Would you tell me in particular by name which judges are endorsing this?
I will tell you, Senator Turbeck Berry, I am somewhat reluctant to do that. And I will answer your question.
Well, if you want us to consider, you said the judges in Minnehaha County. Now, that carries a lot of weight. I think we're entitled to know who you're talking about if you want us to consider that.
Well, I know that Judge Zell is in support of this. I also know that I have been before Judge Nealis, Judge Joseph Nealis, with where I've walked wards through on these particular types of crimes, and he has looked down at the what my request for a warrant and looked up at me and said and shook his head.
But I guess what I'm asking is, have any of the judges authorized you to tell us that, that they are in support of this bill?
I have not had a judge tell me that, not me, and I'm there are others in support of this bill who I believe have that authorization, but I have not had a judge tell me, but I have not asked a judge. I'll tell you, and I can let me explain to you why. I know I work with these judges so closely. I know who is in support of this, but when you publicize judges in support of an increased penalty, you are looking at judge shopping. When defense attorneys become aware of the judges that are in support of the fact that when you solicit a minor, you perhaps should receive more than 2 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary. Now we're looking at defense attorneys who will take judges off of a case.
So some of the judges are in support of it and others aren't.
I can't say that. I don't know that others are not.
Well, if all the judges were in support of it, there'd be no judge shopping option, would there be?
I don't know that there are judges that haven't voiced an opinion, so I don't know if they're in support of it or not. I haven't asked them.
All right. But my understanding is that even the judges that you say are supporting this bill are typically not imposing the maximum penalty under existing law?
No, they are imposing the maximum
penalty. Well, 2 years in the state penitentiary would be the maximum, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily. If you are sentenced to 2 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary, you don't serve 2 years in the
South. I understand that, but you're saying, has anybody in Minnehaha gotten 2 years in the state penitentiary?
No.
Thank you.
I'm a little confused that you're... No one has gotten 2 years?
Not that I know of.
I thought you said they were sentenced to 2 years and they were out in 6 months.
No, what we are generally asking for is a suspended execution of sentence, which would be 2 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary and 6 months in the Minnehaha County Jail, which is, in the view of, I think, many people, a better way of handling the case.
If this bill became law and it went to a Class 4 felony, that simply allows the court to impose 10 years, doesn't it? There's no mandate, there's no shell. It just allows the court to go up to 10 years.
Correct. There's no mandatory minimum.
Senator Hedebrand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hope I've admired your work for many years, and especially in this area, you do a great job. But there's always a concern when there's a request that we increase a penalty. It seems that this committee often hears requests like this. We don't hear the opposite. No one comes on behalf of folks and says we should reduce a penalty. The thing that struck me when I read this bill is this. First of all, I assume this is a registry offense.
It is.
So that when you're convicted of this, regardless of how much time you spend, you're on the registry for the rest of your life?
Currently under South Dakota law, yes.
The rest of your life. So someone is on a computer and they commit the acts that fit the predicate of this crime, even though there's no victim. There is a law enforcement officer pretending to be a victim. Is that right? You can be convicted?
Yes.
Do you feel that there should be a distinction between the category of seriousness for this crime of solicitation when, in fact, there is no one who is a victim of the crime versus times when someone is a victim, when there is actually a solicitation? You described the circumstance of meeting in the park or whatever it happens to be. Do you think a distinction should be made between those two circumstances?
Well, there is a distinction. If there's, if, from my perspective, if, first of all, yes, there is a distinction because you don't have a child who has been victimized, and we all know what we're talking about when you're talking about a child who's actually gone through this type of a situation. But if we had, I think in my, from my perspective, if I had a child who was, first of all, solicited to engage in sexual activity, and then they went so far as to meet at the park to engage in the sexual activity, I would, in addition to charging solicitation of a minor, I would charge attempted sexual contact.
But what if they didn't meet in the park? What if they didn't take that additional step? And yet there's a real person on the other end of the communication.
But that, and then I would say that that's from my perspective, definitely a different situation. That's not a case that warrants 10 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary by any means.
But a person could get 10 years if we change the law under that circumstance.
They could. But it's not, it's not any different than the fact that a person can get up to 15 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary for sexual contact with a minor. Some cases warrant a suspended execution of sentence. Some cases warrant 5 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary. Some cases warrant 10 years or 15 years. Every case is an individual case, and you have to look at each case individually.
So if that's true, why don't we just release any limitation at all on the court in terms of the number of years they're able to give?
And allow them to give anything?
I mean, what's the point of having a limitation at all?
I think the point of having a limitation is to ensure that individuals who commit crimes in the state of South Dakota are treated, that all are treated in some manner fairly and consistently, so that if you happen to have a judge in Union County who is in favor of sending an individual, you know, who's a very, you know, wants to send everyone to the penitentiary and then sends everyone to the penitentiary, as opposed to someone in Minnehaha County who believes very much in reform and, you know, sends people to the penitentiary for a very short period of time. I mean, we need to have consistency amongst our judges, and when you impose caps, it helps maintain consistency amongst our judges.
Senator Chibak Berry.
Thank you. Is it still the law in South Dakota that if the offender has had a prior felony, that the class of felony can be enhanced?
Under this particular statute, if the person is convicted of a second or subsequent violation of this section, it within 15 years, it becomes a class 5. Now, true, if a person has, I mean, then you talk about habitual offenders. If a person has a prior felony, you can file a part two, a habitual offender, to increase up to the next level. Yes. So that would increase it from a class 2 to a class, from a class 6 to a class 5.
And that's 5 years in prison, is it?
It is.
Okay, thanks.
Further questions? Thank you. I hope Mr. Schroyer, you still want this bill deferred at the request of Senator Dierstedt to
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to reserve my comments until later.
Okay, that'd be good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The balance of this will be deferred until 2:12, till next Thursday. House Bill 1097. We're going to get the Reader's Digest version of this bill, right, Mr. Barnett?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Tom Barnett, State Bar. The chair of this committee is my prime sponsor on the Senate side. He asked, how long did the testimony go in the House? And I said, just about an hour. And he said, could we do a Reader's Digest version over here? And I said, sure. But I am going to, particularly for the benefit of the several new senators here, I do have to do a little history 101, and I'll try to keep that as brief as I can. But the background is perhaps the most important thing. The bill is very, very simple. And Senator Heideprim can expand on the history if he deems it appropriate. The State Bar at an annual meeting in 1989 discussed the issue of how to find a source for supplemental funding for legal services for the poor. And they voted to bring to the legislature a filing fee on civil cases that would be dedicated to legal services. And so following that mandate, in 1990 we brought a bill, and we were unsuccessful. In 1991, we brought it again, passed both houses, and Governor Mickelson vetoed it. We brought it again in 1992, passed both houses, Governor Mickelson vetoed it. Senate overrode it, but we couldn't get the override in the House. And the Governor Mickelson was very supportive of legal services, but he believed that there was a serious constitutionality issue where you're imposing a filing fee and dedicating it to a specific entity. I can tell this committee that that matter has been, that challenge or concern was nationwide, and that it has been litigated fully, and the filing fees dedicated to assist poor people with their civil problems and provide access to the courts is now the law of the land. Every place it's been challenged, it's been successful. One of the, I gave the packet last week, last Friday, because this was presented at some length in the House side, and to do the House version, I thought I'd give you some homework over the weekend. But if you only looked at one sheet in that packet, it would be the colored map. And what you see is that 47 states provide some assistance, a funding mechanism, if you will, for legal services for the poor. South Dakota is one of the three that does not. Our neighbors to the east, Minnesota, they use general funds, but they didn't. They started out using a filing fee just similar to what we have here. And they spend $35 approximately per poor person to assist in that process. South Dakota, of course, is at the bottom with zero. Nebraska is about $15 per poor person. Iowa, about just shy of $8. North Dakota, about $3. Now, we have a number of entities that have tried to assist the legal services with their funding. The State Bar itself has tried to help. We have a educational charitable arm, a card called the Bar Foundation, and some of you may have caught State House on Public Broadcasting. That's one of the grants that the foundation, the Bar Foundation, funds. But we also assist legal services with grants. In addition to that, we created 3 years ago Access to Justice. We have lawyers who are willing to do pro bono work. They're willing to help take the cases that legal services can't handle. And so we created a 501c3 and to try to line up the client who legal services can't handle with a volunteer lawyer. And we've been running that for 3 years. In addition to that, we have an opt-out in the State Bar where we invite our members to add $75 to their dues, which is dedicated to the foundation to assist in the funding of Access to Justice and the legal aid programs. I bring those to your attention not because they're necessarily germane to the bill before you, but to demonstrate that our people, my people, are doing everything that they can. They're giving their time and they're giving their money, but we can't do it all. And there is a role, for the state to assist. And that was recognized last year. We started with a bill on the House side, and it would have imposed a filing fee on small claims, sliding scale between $5 to $8. And in House State Affairs, the collection company said that's too big a burden on us because we only recover those fees in maybe half the cases, and 5 to 8 is too much. And so the State Affairs stripped that off and put in a general appropriation of $100,000 and sent it down to appropriations. Now, leadership assured me that is not to send it down to the killing fields. We truly believe and recognize that the state has an interest and an obligation, and we're dead serious on the $100,000. Last year, the fiscal condition of the state was not nearly what it is today, but I can tell you that I didn't think there was $100,000 that was going to be funded. And I said, and I brought an amendment, and I said, give us five. Because what that bill last year did was create the Commission on Equal Access to Our Courts. We recognize in our Constitution, Article 3, Section 20, we guarantee to each and every one of our citizens access to our courts. But it's all words if poor people can't get in. And so that bill last year appropriated $5,000 to fund the commission, which that bill created. They serve for free on that commission. I thought you might be interested in knowing who they are. Former legislator Mary Bibby from Brookings, former Speaker of the House Steve Cutler, Cheryl Hanna, who's used to be the co-director of Dakota Plains Legal Services, and she is the director of Access to Justice. We had Judge Caldwell from Sioux Falls, Judith Roberts from UJS, and then we have Tom Welk and Tom Fritz. Tom Fritz is from Rapid City, and Tom Welk is from Sioux Falls. They met, and they were charged with the obligation. Find a funding source. Even if it's a very small step, find a funding source so that we can start going forward to join the yellow states as we try. One of the reasons why that commission was created is because it isn't just the state bar's responsibility, and I frankly felt that having outsiders come and take a look at it might bring new ideas, innovation, and so forth. And so as a result of that, they brought you 1097. Could I have a page pass an amendment out, please? In a nutshell, Senate Bill 1097 would apply a $50 filing fee after a case is all done, after a divorce, after the custody dispute and so forth, when those are all done and there's been a final decision, if one of the parties wants to go back into court and ask for modification, under the current law, they pay no additional filing fee. They paid that $70 5 years ago. Now they're going back into court. There's no filing fee. And the commission felt that that was an appropriate place to start as a way of looking for some funding. Now, they also recognize that you don't want to put the burden, the burden of funding the legal services on the poor people. And so, with the chair's permission, may I address the amendment? Assuming that the amendment passes, we already know that under existing law, the Department of Social Services doesn't pay filing fees. If they're representing people in temporary custody and so forth, they don't pay a filing fee ever. If the amendment to 1097 is adopted, we would include exceptions of any petitioner who's asking for change in child support. If they're already receiving any assistance from the state under Title 28, which is, ADC and all those things, they are automatically exempt too. And so we just took a big category of people who we can presume are indigent and can't afford the $50 fee, and we're saying we're not even going to look at it. Now, And so if that goes on, we've just taken a whole bunch of people and said they don't have to pay the $50. And I've chatted with the commission. They're cool with that. And I worked out the language with Department of Social Services. And so that, and I would, we very much view that amendment as a friendly amendment, and I ask you to put that on. There's another safe, a fail safe. Anybody who is not receiving the assistance, who nevertheless, because perhaps of loss of employment, believes that they can't afford it, they will receive in the packet an affidavit form to ask the judge to waive the filing fee. And that will go to the judge. The judge will take a look at it and decide whether or not, in their particular circumstances, it ought to be waived. So we believe we've put it with the amendment in good form. It's a start, and we'd ask your favorable action both as to the amendment and as to the bill.
Mr. Brennan, I'm glad we didn't agree to the Atlantic Monthly version.
I'm sorry.
Any questions of Mr. Barnett? Senator Gillespie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Barnett, you referenced the packet as far as that affidavit, the catch-all affidavit for those who aren't receiving the Title 28 benefits. Are you talking about in the child support modification packet that'll go out there? Is that right?
Mr. Chair? Yes, in consultation with the Department of Social Services, they provide, they receive federal funds for this. They're the registry for child support and child support modifications. And they put a packet, it's up on their website, or they'll mail it out. And they would now include in that packet the affidavit and the order, the waiver of that, and so everybody would have that easily available to them.
Further questions? I'm going to hold this amendment until we hear further testimony or maybe from any opponents. Are there other proponents? Proponents of 1097. Proponents of 1097. Seeing none, are there opponents to Senate Bill or House Bill 1097? Opponents? Seeing none. The hearing on House Bill 1097 is closed for committee discussion and or action. The chair would like to move on the amendment 1097JA. Senator Gillespie moves and seconded by Senator Turbeck-Berry on the amendment 1097JA. Any discussion? I think we'll take a roll call on that. Those in favor of 1097JA signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will take the roll.
Senators Gillespie, aye. Heideprim,
aye.
Schmidt,
aye.
Turbeck-Berry,
aye.
Valley,
aye.
Teason,
aye.
Abdallah,
aye.
Seven ayes.
7-0 on the amendment. Now, further discussion on the bill as amended. Senator Heideprim moves do pass. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Gillespie. The issue is House Bill 1097 as amended, recommended do pass. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Gillespie,
aye.
Heideprim,
aye.
Schmidt,
aye.
Turbeck-Berry,
aye.
Valley,
aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Abdallah?
Aye. 7-0. House Bill 1097 will go to floor on a 7-0 vote. The last bill on the agenda today is a very important bill, Senate Bill 131, and that's to authorize sheriffs to order autopsies.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, before we get to that, did you already move 123, Senate Bill 123? Do we need to talk about that?
We deferred that to next Thursday. Senate Bill 131, authorized sheriff's order, autopsy, Senator Gillespie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Margaret Gillespie, Senator, District 16. Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill 131 is an act to authorize sheriffs to order autopsies. Our Union County Sheriff, Dan Lamoge, brought this issue to my attention. As the committee can understand, when there's a death, if that death is under any type of suspicious circumstance, the sheriff is usually the individual who's going to be one of the first on the scene. I could speak extensively about the comments and reasons that we need this bill, but I know there's a number of sheriffs here who have the practical experience to justify this authority that they feel and I feel they need. But I would like to just quickly go through the bill, the substance of the bill. We have the general law enforcement title under Title 23, where we're asking that in addition to state's attorneys and coroners who now have authority to ask for the autopsy, that we add sheriffs. And 23 is the law enforcement title, and then chapter 14 is the coroner's inquest. And then under section 2 and 3, that's the public health and safety title, and that's chapter 26 is custody and disposition of bodies. We need to add sheriff in addition to coroner and state's attorney under those two public health title sections. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand by for any questions and ask for your favorable consideration.
Any questions, Senator Gillespie? Thank you. Other proponents? Morning, Sheriff.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Mike Lightholt, Hughes County Sheriff. As Senator Gillespie pointed out, there's been a kind of a overlooked part of the autopsy, or the ordering of autopsies, for quite some time. when an unattended death occurs in South Dakota by law, there are two people that have to be notified, the coroner and the sheriff. And that, of course, is because the coroner has to determine that they are, in fact, deceased, and he has to sign the death certificate. And he is allowed the chance to order an autopsy if he needs to determine what that cause of death is so he can put it on the death certificate. Well, the sheriff, of course, is charged with the investigation if it's under suspicious circumstances. Well, we don't have the same privilege as the coroner does, and if we happen to disagree about whether an autopsy needs to be done, then we need to take the next step, which is to go to the state's attorney and ask for it. Normally that's successful, but what happens if the state's attorney's out of town or unavailable when it happens? So this is just the next step in our ability to investigate suspicious deaths, in our opinion. I had one instance in my career when that very thing happened. A deputy coroner was convinced he knew the cause of death. I had more background information on the domestic situation in that family and felt uncomfortable with that, wanted an autopsy, he refused. And so luckily I was able to get a hold of the state's attorney, and the state's attorney agreed with me, and we were able to perform the autopsy. But those situations can happen. They're rare, but they can happen. So we're just asking for that next logical step in our responsibility to investigate these issues.
Any questions for the sheriff? Senator Heidepin.
Sheriff, I can see why this would be needed. I suppose the only concern would be the possibility of conflict between and among the three officers now who would have the power in any county, the state's attorney, the sheriff, or the coroner, any one of whom can order an autopsy, none of whom can cancel the other's order. But what if more than one ordered an autopsy, different physicians? I suppose that's a possibility, not likely.
I would doubt that would happen, Senator. You know, in our case, we would need a forensic autopsy. You know, there are postmortems that basically any doctor can do, but then for evidentiary purposes, we need a forensic autopsy. And there are, as you know, there are limited people in the state that are able to do forensic autopsies. I don't see that becoming an issue. But
I look at this as sort of a companion bill to the other one that making its way, a medical examiner, a statewide medical examiner. So my personal feeling is hopefully we can get them both put together. Any other questions? Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you.
Are there other proponents? Other proponents? Are there opponents to Senate Bill 131? Opponents? Seeing none, the public hearing on Senate Bill 131 is closed for committee discussion and or action.
Move to pass.
Senator Tubak-Berry moves to pass, seconded by Senator Teason. Any discussion? Senator Teason.
Well, it'd be my observation of the three people listed here that the sheriff would probably be the most qualified of the three to order an autopsy. Frankly, I thought they were already listed because in Pennington County, as you may know, the sheriff is the coroner. I thought the sheriff already had the authority. This would clarify that. Obviously, that's not the case in all the other counties, so I'm supportive of this.
Well, also, too, we're talking about the coroner and the state's attorney. In most cases, other than probably Pennington County, and I know Meade County has a chief deputy sheriff as a coroner, but if you have, like in a lot of counties where you have the funeral director as the coroner, it makes no sense not to have the sheriff with the authority to order an autopsy because he's the chief investigator of the thing and of the death, and he would know probably more than any one of the three about the circumstances around it. So I think this is a no-brainer. Senator Tubak-Berry? Wait a minute. One of the privileges of the chair is you can talk as long as you want, when you want.
I'll move to pass. Oh, we already got a motion.
We got a motion and a second to do pass on 131. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor of 131 do pass, signify by saying aye. Those opposed, nay. The secretary will take the roll.
Senators Gillespie.
Aye.
Heideprim.
Aye.
Schmidt.
Aye.
Tubak-Berry.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Abdallah.
Aye. 7-0. How long do I have to wait? Is there a second?
Second.
There's a motion and second to move consent on 131. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? 131 will go to the floor on consent. Is there any further business for the Judiciary Committee? Chair will entertain a motion to adjourn. A motion second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.